Case number 12-7050, James Winstead et al., Appellants v. District of Columbia, a Municipal Corporation, and Vincent C. Gray in his official capacity as Mayor of the District of Columbia. Mr. Williams for the appellants, Ms. Johnson for the appellees.
May it please the court, my name is Kirk Williams. I'm here on behalf of the appellants. We have respectfully requested 2 minutes for rebuttal. The appellants respectfully request that you reverse the decision of the district court for two reasons. First, the district barred the plaintiffs from post-deprivation hearings for several years in violation of procedural due process. And second, the district is liable for damages caused by the due process violations because, one, the post-deprivation hearings were barred by an established municipal procedure, not employee negligence, and two, because the district deliberately failed to remedy obvious due process violations. The case at bar asks, how soon after a temporary deprivation under Matthews v. Eldris must the district provide disability recipients with adjudicatory hearings? Put another way, once the district deprived the plaintiffs of disability benefits, the due process clause imposed a duty to provide timely post-deprivation hearings. On the record, there are no legitimate public interests to support the district depriving the plaintiffs of benefits.
Don't you have an antecedent issue, which is that, assuming you're right,
yes, sir,
that there's a due process problem here, you have to show, under Monell, a municipal policy, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, maybe that's what you should focus on.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree with me about that?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, and why don't you focus on that?
Okay. Well, as the plaintiffs argued in their brief, the district made a deliberate decision to strictly limit the disability recipients' access to administrative and judicial review by requiring that the district issue an appealable order before they could access the court system. On the record, it is clear that it was the district's failure for years to issue these appealable orders that caused the plaintiffs the several-year deprivation of disability benefits.
But can you just so I understand the facts, I thought the problem focused on the first step in the process, as I understood it, was that the injured employee files a claim and then the mayor's designee, gives an answer. And then if they're dissatisfied with that, they can get a hearing. And I thought the issue here was that between those two steps, the district inserted a rehearing requirement.
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't a rehearing process. In the case at bar, the district issued a notice that effectively deprived the plaintiffs of disability benefits. And the plaintiffs were required to request reconsideration.
Reconsideration of that before they could get a hearing, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, that's the issue, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So now, as I understand Monell, you to prevail here, you need to show that was the result of a district policy. The policy makers adopted that. It was a formally adopted policy.
Yes, Your Honor. The procedure was admitted to in the brief, I may, of the government, in which they argued or stated that under district policy, the claimants could not receive a hearing until after the reconsideration period had been completed by the districts by the issuance of an appealable order. That was district policy. And it's the appellant's brief.
Well, the policy is now formally adopted, correct?
I'm sorry,
they've done that. This rehearing reconsideration process is now formally built into the procedures. But you're talking about a period of time when it was informal. Right?
Well, Your Honor, when it was informal as well as formal, the plaintiffs were still required to obtain, even today, the plaintiffs who contend that they haven't had post-deprivation hearings are awaiting an appealable order from the district under the district's adopted reconsideration process that was made statutory in 2005.
But the delay has to be the policy.
The policy is...
Well, I mean, obviously, the policy about the appeal order is not what you're challenging. You're challenging the delays that occur in the process.
Well, Your Honor, yes, the delays, but if you understand it from the point that the constitutional violation occurred with the failure to provide timely post-deprivation hearings. Now, while the deprivations may have been contrary to district policy or even negligent, there's no claim that the deprivations, the initial deprivations, were unconstitutional, only that once the district deprived the plaintiffs of their disability benefits, they had a constitutional duty to provide timely post-deprivation hearings under Matthew v. Eldridge.
Right, and the question is timely.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the question here is, did the district have a policy of not providing timely remedies, or was that instead something that happened in certain cases but was not known or obvious to district policymakers at a level required by Supreme Court precedent for this kind of liability?
Well, Your Honor, the case at bar is analogous to Logan v. Zimmerman. It's a very similar case. Let me get the cite for you, in which the court says, may I pardon? In Logan v. Zimmerman, the Supreme Court held that it was the state policy itself that deprived the plaintiff of their rights by operation of law whenever the commission failed to timely issue or hold a hearing. It is very similar to the case at bar here. It is the district's policy by operation of law that barred the plaintiffs from post-deprivation hearings whenever the Office of Risk Management failed to issue appealable orders.
Look, let me try it this way. If the D.C. procedure, the manual that was adopted by the city, specifically provided that the city has 8 years in which to respond to a petition for reconsideration, then you would have a formally adopted policy that provided for up to 8 years for reconsidering the Merrill's designee's first decision. Then you'd have a clear constitutional question: does that or does it not violate the due process clause? Here, we don't have anything like that. We have, as best I can tell from the record, is this was a practice that developed over a couple of years that resulted in these delays. And so you need to, correct me if you think I'm wrong, you need to find some, I thought you were arguing that this was so obvious that district officials, although they did not adopt the policy of delay, that they either were warned of it by the various letters and statements in your brief, or they should have known that.
Well, Your Honor,
what I thought your case was.
May I respond, Your
Honor?
Yes, Your Honor. As I said in the opening, there are two grounds for finding municipal liability. One is the actual procedure of the reconsideration procedures, and the other was the inaction on behalf of the district policymakers to address what were obvious constitutional violations. In the case at Barr, the district was provided with...
So what's your best example of the latter?
Of the... Well, Your Honor, the most formidable would be the filing of the federal complaint in 2004, wherein the plaintiffs alleged that they were had been deprived of disability benefits and had not received post-deprivation hearings. It was served on the mayor's office, through the attorney general, and the district. Nevertheless, it still took the district several years to issue the appealable orders that allowed the plaintiffs to have their post-deprivation hearings. And, Your Honor, if I may add, several of the plaintiffs contend that they still have not received appealable orders, and they still are awaiting an opportunity for post-deprivation hearings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Holly Johnson for the District of Columbia. I'd like to begin by addressing this argument that the claimants have raised regarding satisfying Monell through pointing to a formal policy on the part of the District of Columbia. In their reply brief, the claimants raised for the first time an argument that the district's policy of requiring the request for reconsideration, of adding that additional procedural step in the process, itself satisfied the requirement of Monell. So my first point to this court would be that this argument is completely forfeited. This was not raised at trial. This was not raised in trial briefing, and it was certainly not raised in the claimant's opening brief, where they relied entirely on policymakers' inaction failure to train theory. But my second point is, if this court is interested in the merits, that this argument is completely wrong. Even if the policy caused delays as a result, the policy was not to delay. And I believe Judge Tatel explained that fairly well when he addressed the comparison between a policy that said the district could take 8 years to delay as opposed to a policy that said, here's an extra step in the procedure. In fact, I'll point to this court's decision in Lightfoot, which is cited frequently in this case, in which this court noted that the unwritten policy of the request for reconsideration was to take only a few weeks. And I'll also point to the claimant's reply brief, where they argue that the delays, in fact, violated a municipal policy of providing prompt responses. And then we turn to the claimant's inaction failure to train claim with regard to satisfying Monell. And here, you just look at the fact that there's no evidence. And, of course, first I'll address what the claimants raised here, which is the allegations in the complaint themselves. This court held...
Suppose the evidence in the record, suppose it was very clear that majority of these reconsiderations were taking, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. And suppose it was also clear that over a period of time, the mayor and other city officials had been warned repeatedly about it and nothing happened.
That would be precisely the type of evidence that could satisfy Monell.
And you don't have any doubt that that would be a serious due process problem.
I can't speak to the period of time that would be a due process problem, only because part of the analysis of an unconstitutional delay involves evidence of what was involved on the district side, and that's evidence that was wholly undeveloped by the claimants. But certainly there could be evidence that would establish that such a delay was unjustified. It just wasn't introduced here. In Carter, at 795 F. 2nd at page 123, this court specifically held that allegations in a complaint...
Well, I was wondering about Carter. Is Carter cited in the briefs?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but I'm glad you brought it up. I was quite surprised that you didn't cite it.
I'm not sure I didn't cite it.
Oh, well, maybe you did. Maybe I missed it. Did you?
Oh, in fact, I even put a little asterisk next to it as a case that I relied on.
All right, good. Excellent.
But in Carter, this court held that allegations in a complaint filed in court are not just not enough to satisfy Monell, but they're actually irrelevant to Monell. And the trial court in Carter just refused to consider the allegations in the complaint and said that was hearsay and that could not satisfy Monell. I'll also note that in Carter, this court found it not surprising that the chief of police might not have read all of the detailed allegations in complaints. And here, even if the allegations in the complaint could satisfy Monell, we don't know who read them. We don't know if a policymaker went through the detailed allegations in the complaint. So the heart of the Monell problem, which is, of course, what this court should be focusing on in this case, is that the claimants did not depose a district witness. They did not call a district witness to testify. They offered no evidence that a district policymaker was aware of any problems. And even if a district policymaker was aware of the handful of problems raised in this complaint, that alone would be not enough to establish a policy in practice under Monell. This court has required a concentrated, fully packed, precisely delineated scenario to create the type of policy and practice that could establish deliberate indifference. And the scattered incidents here simply cannot satisfy that standard.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Did Mr. Williams have any time left? You can take 1 minute and 7 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I have that cite for Logan. It's 455 U.S. 436. The district raises two issues in their argument that I think we should address. The district had a duty to provide post-deprivation hearings. They argue that the plaintiffs failed to demonstrate that they did not have a good reason for not fulfilling their duty. The burden has never, in due process cases and Matthew v. Elgis, has never been on the plaintiffs to establish the legitimate governmental interest necessary to avoid the due process violation by the government. Also, as far as Monell goes and the district being put on notice, in addition to the complaint, there were several public filings. There were letters written. There were complaints written directly to the director's office of DEOS as well as the Office of Risk Management. The district cannot claim that the Office of Risk Management, the director, can bury his head in the sand and ignore obvious complaints and then claim that he was unaware of them. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted.